This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need. From athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Welcome to the Huntivore Podcast, powered by Sportsman's Empire, where we celebrate the hunting and fishing lifestyle through the utilization and consumption of our wild game. No egos.
Fork in hand, beer in the other.
No status.
A piece of red meat on a hot grill and turn it into a burnt offering.
Just catch it, cut it, cook it.
We're winding down with deer season. What does that look like? Is it a great time? Is it a somber time? What does that look like for Dan Johnson? Then we're going to get into some processing stuff. I'm very curious on how you handle your processing situations. And then we'll get into enjoying the harvest in the Johnson household. Does that sound good?
Perfect. That sounds good. Deal. Now, can I introduce you as the guest? Can I introduce you? Can I start right now? And can I kick the show off for you?
It's already live. So yeah, man, I'm putting the show in your hands, man.
All right, here we go. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the one of a kind Michigan and international podcast, The Huntivore, with your host, Nick Otto.
Oh, thank you, everybody. You're so kind. so kind. Everybody knows it. Everybody loves it. Thank you so much. Well, hey, folks, if you're wondering who just hijacked the podcast there for a moment, just want to let you know we are on the line with Dan Johnson, other known as Nine Fingers, host of the Nine Finger Chronicles. He is the CEO and president running the big wig stuff over at Sportsman's Empire network that I am a part of, and also host of a whole sorts of other podcasts that are on that network as well. He's even a fashion designer. I think this gets overlooked a lot. Ooh. Dan, you've gotten yourself into fashion design with the full sneak gear. What got you into making swag? I thought that was just for Gen Z kids. You're getting into the swag game?
I guess I'm getting into the swag game. I like how you said you used the word fashion. Like, I don't think anybody ever in my life has associated fashion with me. And so, but here's the quick version of it. I said, I want to start something different. Let's make some t-shirts. With the way my mind works, I think, like, imagine a bouncy ball inside of a metal room, and it never loses any momentum or speed. Okay. That is what the inside of my brain is like. Boom, 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 boom. And so I had this idea to start a t-shirt, like an apparel line, and all these crazy ideas popped into my head. And I'm just like, hey, dude, let's put them on a t-shirt and call it, I don't know. I had just gotten a full sneak mount back from my taxidermist. And when I said it out loud, I was like, dude, that sounds like a good business name. Full sneak. Yeah. And so full sneak gear it was.
That's awesome. That's awesome. The designs that are coming out, I like them too, because again, from your metal cage with the bouncy ball, you're coming out with stuff that it's like, when you see it, it doesn't fit me exactly, but I love looking. If it was a poster, zombie deer, dude, that poster, I would put that as my backdrop. I would put that up in my room if I had posters still up in my room. I love that. In fact, I think I saw your reel. I think you reposted it again, but pointing out the different details of it, the deer standing there, just open wounds. I'm sure that's how a lot of bucks are looking right now, just beat up after the rut. Yeah. And then, yes, the skull in the corner, very metal band, hard metal band. It's got the arrow going into the skull. That was a great setup. I do love that shirt.
Quick backstory about that specific design. I wanted to make, I had a vision of what I was looking for. And I was just like, I started Googling death metal album cover artwork. And it brought me to a company in, I believe it was the Czech Republic, out in Eastern Europe. And this company does is they design all over the world, from the United States to, I guess, Eastern Europe is like, it has a heavy presence of a death metal and like heavy metal type bands. And I brought this idea to them, and they're like, let me think about it. And then they said yes. And then that was the outcome. We bounced some things back and forth, but it was pretty cool to get to go outside of the hunting industry to the death metal realm to pull inspiration for that t-shirt. So it's crazy, man.
Yeah. There's a big, I would say, like, with that same like heavy metal, death metal genre, that is huge in Scandinavia. Finland and Sweden. So I was surprised to hear you say Eastern European. I mean, we think we rock hard here in the U.S. I think, again, we need to take a look outside. Like, there are some people who definitely rock much harder than what we do on some days.
They got that Viking blood in them.
That's what it is.
Viking blood. Yeah. Hey, before we move on, I do got to say one thing.
Yes.
Dude, you have the perfect voice for teaching children, okay? But I have to say that I was brainstorming. I was like, okay, Nick Otto's voice, that's his, he's got it. right? He's got the voice that he could be a news anchor, whatever the case is. But I don't know why I was thinking about this. I was thinking about what other profession you could be with your voice. And the first thing that popped up into my head was a terrorist / hostage negotiator.
Put me in that type of, I don't know if my voice would make it in that type of stressful situation.
It sounds like you're calm all the time. I would love to see you parent. Like, let's be truthful with me here.
Okay.
Do you ever yell at your kids?
Absolutely.
There you go. Like, I want to hear that. I want to hear what that sounds like. Because that might change my view of you. But it's more of a realistic view. But I can't imagine you just being like, all right, everybody, let's calm down and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And so I don't know why I was thinking about that's me in a nutshell. I'm just a dumbass who thinks about stuff that really is wasting my time.
I love it. And it's also, yeah, I have to like be honest about myself too. Like, yes, I yell at my children. I feel like as a father, it's one of those things like I've been given this power of my voice. When I want the attention of the entire room, whether it's children, whether it's adults, I will get that. And I refer to it as the Mufasa effect. In the movie Lion King, you've seen it. Mufasa roars and all the hyenas shudder and they stop and you hear Mufasa talk. And then at that point, they run away and they laugh about it and they, you know, talk shit behind his back. But at the same time, at that moment, they listened. And so that's my approach to when I do yell. It is to get that attention. But then, yes, being an elementary school teacher, I then back it way down. Hey, let's now calm down. Let's get to the line that we were supposed to sit on 40 seconds ago. And then at that point, everything's all good to go then.
I have the same thing. But I call it Volcano Dad because for me, I have a very long fuse. I'm very patient with my kids. But when that fuse is gone, it becomes eruption time and I lay waste to the entire house. Nobody's surviving. I eradicate all life within reach of this volcano. And the house then after that is calm until the next time. Right.
Yeah.
So I give everybody a fair opportunity. And I even warn people now, like, hey, listen, you're one step away from Volcano Dad. And we both don't want that. Do we? The last time I did Volcano Dad, my youngest son was throwing a water bottle inside of the car while we were driving to a baseball game. And he hit me on the back of the head with it while I'm driving. And I had to like slam on the brake to avoid hitting a car.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. I put the car in park right in the middle of the highway and I just like blew up, dude. I blew up. But now we're calm. My parent, you know, kids, they respect authority and we're good now, dude. We're good.
Well, good, good. With that though, you mentioned a little bit how it comes back down. Volcano Dad blows up, lay waste. But now on that return side, things are calming up. Green up happens through the magma, happens through that lava rock.
Yep.
Don't you love the return of Calm Dad? The kids come and snuggle up to you. They jump up on you and they want to mess around. They want to wrestle. They want to, you know, be close to Dad again. Isn't that... Yep. I love that. I love the fact that they can recognize like I messed up, you know, and it works better. With a couple of my boys, that works quicker than a couple of the other ones. But at the same time, I just love that they realize like, whoop, I stepped out of line. But then when things are good, things are real good when it comes back. So
absolutely. Absolutely. It tells you that you're doing a good job too, as a father, where you can blow up, you can kick some ass. And they, at the end of it, they come and sit on your lap.
right? Or they want to snuggle up by you on the couch, and or they want to go out inside and play catch or football or whatever the case is. They keep coming back to you because you've built a relationship with them where they can, like, they can trust you, right? And yep. and you start to trust them. You let them know that, and you know, and this is a life lesson, right? For every action, there is a reaction. So if your actions are positive, you're going to get a positive reaction. If your actions are negative, then you're going to get some hot magma right in your face. So we're
going to get some hot magma.
Some hot magma, right? That pyroclastic flow, as the Wu-Tang Clan would say.
Yes. Oh, man, you kind of stole it, but I was gonna sneak it in on you, Dan. I was gonna take your trick and be like, all right, throw some dad wisdom on us like you do from the Nine Finger Chronicles, and you worked it in automatically. So that's automatically good. So yeah, now that we've talked a little bit about that Mufasa effect and being volcano dad, what's your current bit of wisdom that you have as a father? Is it that volcano-ness, or is there another segment of being a father that really is hitting you hard daily right now?
You know, this is great timing, right? Because we've had some shakeups in the past. I mean, even in the past days, I think leading by example, obviously, is a good trait for all things, right? Leading by example, not only to show other adults how you act, but also how your kids, right, act. The other thing that I think with kids, and this is just how I feel, is that is often overlooked is listening to them, because young kids have a lot to tell you. They just don't know how to say it yet. And I think that's where children get the most frustrated, is they, especially the younger kids, they want to say something, and that's where their behavior acts out, because they don't have the words yet to tell that. So as a father, I ask a lot of questions. I spend a lot of time trying to listen to them. And I'm like, hey, listen, calm down a second. Let's talk this out. And usually if you spend just a little extra time as a father, or just as a parent in general, listening to your kids, it may save a further negative reaction in the future. So not only do I lead by example, and I, you know, I'm in charge, I'm the parent. One of my favorite quotes comes from a wrestling coach, an Iowa wrestling coach, where he basically said, like, until you're 18, you don't get to make decisions. You don't get, like, I'll listen to you. I will show you respect, but that doesn't mean that you have anything, right? You don't get, like, respect is earned. It's not given, in my opinion. And so, he goes on to say something like that, where it's just like, hey, listen, if an adult tells you to do something, you better do it, right? Teachers, like, in today's world, we have all of these kids being able to question teachers, right? And they're like, no, I don't feel good. And then the parents are siding with the kids. Like, do you know what happened when I was a kid in high school? Like, I can remember I was naughty. I'm trying to think of what year it was. It might have been seventh or eighth grade. And my mom had to come away from work for a school meeting. And the teachers were like, listen, your kid is doing this, your kid's doing this. And my mom looks at the teacher and goes, beat his ass. Like
green like, light. I feel go. Like,
yeah, green light. You do whatever you need to do to shut him up. And, you know, I never was beaten by a teacher, but they sat my ass down. They checked, they started checking me and things like that. And I think that kind of mentality has gone away, and we need to bring some of that back.
Absolutely.
But long story short,
I agree.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. You're a teacher, right? Yeah. So you have to play like Switzerland in this role. Right?
I gotta be super nicey nice in this situation, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, yeah. Being a dad at school, though, my kids are in elementary, so I actually have my kids in class just for
God, that would suck. That would suck, dude. I couldn't do it.
It is definitely, I've got colleagues who had their kids with them all day. And I'm like, no, no, I want my kids to learn. And yes, they will learn from me their lessons. I will give a lot of heavy life lessons, but reading, writing, arithmetic, it's not going to come from me. It's going to come from someone else. They need to be able to get that in there. But to, yes, my youngest, kind of messing around in class, and I'm hearing that from the teacher, and on the way out to recess, like, I'm like, hey, come here, bud, come here. No, you're sticking in with me. I pulled my own kid out of recess, and he, you know, it's one of those things, like, I can keep tabs on them at school. So I do have like this little bit of superpower where dad is the all seeing eye. He knows what's going on, and being able to handle that, which does keep them in line. Two of them, you know, that was, it's really going to be something that, you know, they're like, dad's over my shoulder right now. My oldest, he kind of just, he's on his own planet. He's doing so well. I mean, he's up and out into the intermediate. He's in the 5-6 building. And you know, he, like you said, the older they get, they need a little bit extra leash. They're looking for that respect piece. And it's like, hey, I'm going to give you some, you know, you're still young. We're still growing here, but he's been able to take that and run and do some really cool stuff on his own. Like, he's gone into doing plays. He's in part of a big production with the school, which I'm like, I would have never done that. I would have never gone and done plays. And I'm like, hats off to you. He's doing that. He's joined swimming. That's been a new opportunity we've been able to do. So we're doing the swimming. He likes backstroke, and he likes the American crawl or freestyle. I think that's what they call it now. So it's like he's venturing out and doing his own stuff, whereas the others are still, they're staying in dad's lane, or mom or dad's lane. They're not venturing out too far yet.
Still wild animals that you're trying to tame for society, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's yes, we have. They are downright savages. I wouldn't want it any other way, because I don't know. I roll with the punches with them. Mm-hmm. It's really fun. You could have put some of like the comedic clown type music on the small game hunt that we just did this past weekend. I mean, we had kids all over. I mean, I had my three boys with me. Two of them had a firearm. The one was just with the backpack. So I was constantly just checking barrels, which inevitably we go over a log and both barrels end up into the dirt, clogged up with snow and ice immediately. So I got to get a stick, and we got to, you know, take them apart, clean them all out. And when we go along, the dog wants to come along with us. The dog finds a shot deer. It was a low shot wounded doe. I didn't bring buckshot with me. All I had was birdshot for if we got a squirrel or a bunny. Like, that's all I had with. So I'm like, I'm not going to shoot this thing with birdshot. And so now the dog is chasing this thing that it's not slowed down a lot, but it definitely doesn't want to move. So it keeps squaring off with the dog. And I'm like, please, like, whop it in its head. Like, I'm trying to catch up with these things, and it feels like I'm standing still. I can't catch up with the dog. I can't get him away from the deer. I want the deer to just smack him on the nose, like, you know, give him the front paw hoof, and it just wouldn't happen. So I'm chasing this dog all over tarnation. I left two kids in the woods, and then I had to finally collect myself, get them back in, and, you know, I finally get in the house after like an hour and a half of running around the woods. And the wife was like, how'd it go? I don't want to talk about it.
Just peachy. But
yeah. I'm going to go take a nap. That's my lesson, I think, from all of this as we were going along, as I just tell that story and hearing reminiscing on your end too, where, you know, kids are going to listen, but at the same time, it's not about me anymore. That's been my biggest lesson that I've taken, is now that,
oh, absolutely,
now that they're out, now that they're joining in with the hunt, and they're looking for me for instruction, they're looking for me on what to do, there will still be an opportunity that I get to go and hunt on my own on occasion. But the solo hunt of me right now for 2025 is going to be few and far between. That's going to be a big focus on where I'm going, is it's going to be kids in the woods with me all 25. Yeah. So that's where we're at.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've kind of gone over that too, man. This year I had in 2024, I had a little scenario play out where I didn't think it was going to happen, but I drew two out of state tags. So I hunted Iowa, of course, where I live. But then I also drew Kansas and South Dakota. And I was successful in South Dakota, and I was successful in Kansas. And Iowa didn't play out, but it was the time, right? So I had like a little over 4 weeks out in the field, right? I had basically, when I go on a hunt, I do like an 8-day trip, right? A day for driving, 6 days of hunting, and then another day for driving. And that's typically how I
do my
non-resident hunt. Yep, plan it out. And so I was gone for 16 days just on those two trips.
Wow.
And then I'm in Iowa, and I put in another, like, I went for 3 days, I came home, and then I went for another 4 or 5 days, and then I came home. And then right before I left for Kansas, I came back to one of my farms for 3 days, and then left straight from that farm to Kansas. And so I don't want to say I hit 30 days this year, but I'm guessing somewhere between, 23 and 28 days of hunting this year. And I don't know if I can do that again, just from the family schedule. Mm-hmm. Like, could I do it? Absolutely. But
right.
the family schedule is interrupted when dad's gone. And, it's not the same when dad's gone. I'll just be honest.
Yep. Yep. Because not only that, you're working from home primarily. Wife is the one who goes to work. So that really does. That's the day to day stuff that really gets interrupted when you're gone.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gotcha. We're going to come back to that a little bit. We're going to talk about those bucks that you got out of state, but I want to take a quick rabbit trail in talking a little bit about the end of season.
Okay.
We are here in Michigan. I think, at the time of the release of this, we will be done with the marathon that is whitetail season in Michigan. We've got our little extended extra to the 12th where we can try to take antlerless deer. People are still trying to do that, take advantage of that. But at the time of this airing, it's going to be done. So Iowa's completed. Am I correct? Or is there still some muzzleloader going on? Is there still some late season antlerless?
Yeah, it's late season right now. So you can, we are recording this on a Thursday. Tomorrow is Friday, and tomorrow is the last day, January 10th, of the Iowa hunting season.
Gotcha.
I don't believe there's any more antlerless seasons right now that are happening, but, there's less than 48 hours left in the Iowa hunting season. And so if I really wanted to get out, I could go fill my archery tag that I didn't fill, or I can go buy a muzzleloader tag still. So that's all that's left, and then we're done.
Gotcha. Now that you're done, essentially, we're down into 48 hours, like you said. What is the mindset? What is the thoughts going through Dan Johnson? Is this a somber time that we're feeling, or is this like the end of an end of a marathon where there's almost a celebration now getting to the end? When you get to the end of a season, what are you feeling right now?
This goes back to just being a dad and a husband type deal, because I don't think anything really. Like, my life is so busy where I was done hunting the moment I got back from Kansas in late November. I didn't go hunting at all in December. Well, just because I don't shotgun hunt. Mm-hmm. And I had goals that maybe I could fill all four of my deer tags this year. That didn't happen because Iowa was rough this year, as far as the rut felt like it was in glue this year. And I just didn't, I passed some good deer, some things went right, some things went wrong, just like any typical hunting season. And I celebrated hard because in October this year, I shot my very first mule deer with a bow. And
congratulations, by the way. I know it's long, long delayed. Congratulations.
Yeah. 6 years of trying to get a mule deer spot in stock.
Wow.
And so that's how long I've been going to South Dakota. And on the sixth year, I got the job done. Now, the second that happened, my season was a 10. 10 out of 10, because I had been wanting to be multi-species for so long that I wanted to shoot another big game animal with my bow that wasn't a whitetail. I got the job done. And from that point, Kansas, the buck I shot in Kansas is just the cherry on top. Iowa, it didn't happen in Iowa this year. I was looking for something, you know, decent, and it never happened. And I'm 100% okay with how the rest of the season played out. So I celebrated my season the first weekend in October once I checked that mule deer box. And then everything that happened after that was just, hey, dude, whatever happens, happens. And I was completely okay with it. So now that the season is wrapping up and it's over, the only thing that I'm thinking about is getting my kids in the wood to go turkey hunting. That's it.
Gotcha. So the celebration, like you said, is done more with the goals that you have set, not necessarily the date on the calendar, where right. some individuals would say, hey, you know what? You know, we've gotten into January now, and some people are going out with different implements. I know myself, implement doesn't really mean a lot to me. So I kind of live on that calendar side where I'm getting into this last week of having the opportunity to harvest a white-tailed deer. And it's kind of one of those, I'm definitely not in the somber side, but I also am very reflective of what that is. And it's mm-hmm. neat to see where yours difference, and it's more into you've set out goals of what you want to achieve, realistic goals of being a multi-species successful with your bow and being able mm-hmm. to do that in that month. That's where that celebration has come about. With some time now, again, we're into January, and you got a chance to take that mule deer to the taxidermist. I'm sure it's definitely not back yet. They've got a lot of work to do on that. Have thoughts gone into 25 now for goals? Are we extending? Are we going further down this multi-species track? What are you thinking?
Yeah, so absolutely. Absolutely. I only went Euro mount. So I don't have enough room in my house to just shoulder mount everything. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm only going to shoulder mount my bigger Iowa bucks from here on out, and then just Euro mount anything outside of Iowa. And so I only did Euro mounts this year for my Kansas buck and my South Dakota mule deer buck. So they were gone, and now they're back, and now they're hanging on my wall. So
excellent.
Another check, you know, like celebrating that.
Hunters, listen up. If you're tired of struggling to hoist up your deer or big game after a successful hunt, it's time to upgrade to Tie Boss Block and Tackle. With its self-locking mechanism, you can easily lift up to 300 pounds by yourself without the need to tie off to anything. Just pull the rope and it locks in place. Made in America and backed by a lifetime warranty, Tie Boss is my go-to tool for all my hoisting and tying down needs. Check out the link in the show notes or head over to tieboss.com.
Dry-aged steaks used to be a steakhouse-only indulgence. An old-world charcuterie was pricey due to being imported or created at a small batch-specific scale. Thanks to UmiDry, their synthetic dry-aging bags and casings allow you to create these meat-crafting treats in your own kitchen. Working in tandem with your fridge, the UmiDry bag material allows moisture and air to pass through, making it possible to dry-age large cuts of steaks or roasts. Paired with their curing and seasoning kits, along with safe and easy to follow instructions, salamis and dry sausage are well within your grasp. Use the link in the show notes and sign up for the newsletter to receive 10% off your order. UmiDry, helping us elevate our wild game from the home kitchen.
...2025 is going to be different for me. I think I am going... Right. This is what I'm thinking right now. I'm thinking I'm going to actually pull back and only hunt Iowa and try to fill two Iowa tags this year. I don't think I'm going to try to do an out of state hunt, that might change, you know, because I have more opportunities in other states. Like South Dakota has gone to a draw, but I've been lucky enough to draw all those years. But then what you have happen is a scenario where I didn't think I was going to draw South Dakota this year, and I put in for both and I got both. So what I'm going to start doing now, I think, is trying to line up, because I have a lot of preference points for Wyoming, for antelope, deer, and elk. And so now it becomes more of about a planning where I'm going to try to do one out of state hunt and start to stagger those so that I can draw, like, because it takes me 3 months or 3 years to get Kansas. Mm-hmm. And then it takes me it's probably going to take me every other to get South Dakota moving forward. So the goal is to go like South Dakota, Kansas, South Dakota, Kansas, Wyoming, South Dakota, Kansas, you know, like go back and forth and burn some of those preference points that I've built up. And then the other thing that I really want to do is there's a lot of really good deer hunting in my neighboring states that I've never taken advantage of. You know, we got Southeast Minnesota, we got Southwest Wisconsin, we got Western Illinois, we got Northeast and Northern Missouri, all within like a 3-hour drive of where I live, 4-hour drive. And I feel like I've been neglecting opportunities that are right in front of me. So there might be an opportunity where if I tag out this year early in, I might just like Wisconsin's over the counter, Minnesota's over the counter, Missouri's over the counter. And I believe Illinois is even over the counter for whitetail tags. And so I might just 3 days, you know, 3 or 4 days, go see what I can shoot and try that. You know, I don't know, but I feel like there's closer opportunities than Kansas and South Dakota. And that way there's more hunting, less traveling, and I can be more efficient with my time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My goodness. It's as much as you got to be proficient in the woods. You almost have to be proficient at Excel or being an accountant when it comes to using these points and lining that up. So 2025 sounds like a very busy year for you as well. Even though you're not going anywhere, it's still trying to lay things out on paper. You mentioned just a little bit ago too, that as you're packing deer stuff away now, big game stuff is going to get packed up, cleaned up, put to the sides of the garage. Your next big push is going to be turkey. Not a whole lot this winter that's grabbing your attention as far as like small game, ice fishing. It's you're hell bent on going for those spring gobblers.
Man, my life with kids and kids activities, I wish that I could do this. Like, we got to take the, I'll tell you this, Nick, I wish you could go downstairs and look at the January calendar. All right. There are 30 days, whatever, in January, and every single one of them has 2 events on them, one for each kid. Saturdays and Sundays even have wrestling tournaments, have birthday parties, have soccer practices, you know. Throughout the week, then we're sitting, obviously we have school, and then we got wrestling, we got baseball. It's January, baseball starting back up.
Isn't that incredible?
Dance, we have soccer. It's just like, oh my God. And so it's just, that's why I don't ever, like, I do not have the ability anymore to just be like, you know what? I'm going hunting tonight. Everything in my life has to be planned out on a calendar. Yep. In order for me to go and do it. So, and that's where I stack my chips, right? So in order for me to do the 8-day out of state hunt, that means I got to stack my chips in that time frame. And I'm not doing the other stuff. That's not near, it's fun, but not near as important to me. Like, I would love to trap, but there's a giant, time suck for trapping. Mm-hmm. I would love to go maybe grab a beagle or some kind of dog and chase rabbits or something like that. You know, again, time sucks, right? And so my schedule is so tight throughout the week that it's hard for me to fit any of that stuff in. So I have all my moves are big, right? They're big and they're calculated and they're scheduled so that I can involve my kids around it. So like, I have no problem with pulling my kids out of school to take them turkey hunting in the spring, right? Usually what happens is we skip school. Like last year, we skipped school on a Friday and then we did the youth season weekend that started before the first season shotgun. And so I took my oldest son and my daughter out of school and it was scheduled though. So it's all about finding the time, putting the activity down in it and then implement, like just going for it.
Yes. Half the listeners that are listening to this right now are going to be saying amen. They're probably going through the same scenario that you are, that you know what, you're not short on money. You're not short on energy. You are short on time. So I'm
time.
Yes. Yep. It's nice to hear though, that you're two steps ahead of it. You're playing chess with this, that if I stay on top of it, you know, things are going to open up. You're going to have those abilities to pull the kids out of school, head out for turkeys. That's the great mindset to do that. So that's probably my biggest thing, is I got to look out past my nose. If I do see an open dot or an open spot on that calendar, I'm more like a thief in the night. I'm really like a raccoon. I will just take advantage of that. Even though there might be something else that my wife wants us to do. Like if I can pull the kids and we go run around on a Sunday afternoon outside, I'm going to take the kids with me and we're going to go have a blast. So dad's going to be the one that throws the wrench into the schedule. But if I go, it's going to be taking others down with me if I'm going to be right about that. That's what our ice fishing is. It's merely a time to go play on the ice, drill a hole and jig around for a little bit, burn some time, and then, come back, you know, for a good night's sleep. Because at that point, kids are going to be toast. Fresh air, lugging stuff on the ice. That's what we're looking forward to this year. Fingers crossed if we keep on developing hard ice out
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Well, hey, circling back on this rabbit trail, man, we went way off on the side. Let's get back talking to those bucks that you got. You got two out-of-state bucks. Congratulations on those, and especially the mule deer that you got. My intrigue revolves around, you got to get those things processed. You got to get those things. You are not in your element at that point. You are hours away from home. You know, it could be a full day that you were saying that I took a whole day to travel. Now it's a whole day to travel back. I have this animal now. Are you processing that in the state that you get it? As in, are you spending time to look ahead and research where you're going to drop this deer off to get it processed? Or are you quartering it yourself, bringing it back to Iowa to your home processor that can take care of that? When you're on the road, when you're traveling, and I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of, depends on what's going on. You got to play it by the fly, but how do you handle now having that animal and to get it to the processor?
Hey man, it's just being prepared with, an extra cooler or two in the back of your truck, really is what it is. And sometimes they get used and sometimes they don't. But for me, my mule deer, I shot it on day 4, I believe, out of maybe a 6-day hunt. And so I had time. I deboned it in the field, right? So all I took off of it was, we did the gutless method on that. So we didn't have to mess with any of that. The first time I've ever done the gutless method, and I had a guy who had done that before, like kind of helped walk me through it. And that was awesome. And you're not carrying all the extra weight of the bone. And then I dropped it off at a processor in South Dakota and he goes, give me 24 hours. And so I packed it in ice. And then while they were working on it, I went out hunting with the other guy in hopes that he could get, on another mule there. And then I got a call it was either the next day or the next day. I can't remember how long it took. But I dropped it off. Maybe it took a day, maybe it took a day and a half or something like that. And he ended up grinding it, packing it, like making, he took the back straps and made steaks out of them. And all I had to do was pack it in my ice and then transfer it to the freezer when I got home. So that's one scenario. Now, the other one was my uncle. Now, my uncle has everything set up in Kansas. He's got an entire garage and then a shed dedicated to deer hunting. Okay. So he has the pulley system. He's got the knives. So we pulled the buck off of, we pulled the buck off of the ranch, put it in the back of his truck, took it to, took it to his garage, hung it up overnight. The next morning we processed it, took the cape off, cut the head off. We ended up, we even went as far as to take the fur off the head and remove the bottom jaw and try to cut as much meat off of that as possible. And then we quartered everything and chunked everything there. So then what I did was I packed all of that on ice. And then I dropped it off at a neighboring town processor. Now you're going to get a kick out of this. I didn't look at prices when I placed my order. I had 47 pounds of meat off this whitetail buck that I got. And I went in and I started dedicating, right? So they have these, if you want breakfast sausages, it's so 10 pounds of this is going to get you 30 pounds of this, right? And then they add maybe some pork to it, or maybe they add, their flavors or their beef tallow or whatever, whatever it is that you're ordering, they add stuff to it to make it what it is, right? And so I said, and I didn't even check prices. So I might, when they call me to go pick up my stuff, I might be dropping like $1,500 on processing fees for what I ordered. I mean, I ordered sticks. I ordered breakfast sausages. I ordered salami. I had a couple, I had some ground, and then I can't remember what else I ordered. It might've been like burgers or shit. I don't even know.
Oh, patties. There's 10 pounds.
I can't recall 10 pounds of meat that I gave to them, but it was like $20 here, $40 here, $30 here, plus the processing fee to do that. And so I don't know what I got coming. They said it'll probably be done in February. Come pick it up. Could be $10,000. And then I'd be broke.
Right. You got to take it. Yeah. You got to take a loan out on something you're going to end up throwing in a skillet.
Yeah, exactly. I'm guessing it'll be somewhere around $1,000 or something like that. But, I haven't done that in a long time. Usually it's just ground and backstrap. So I got the backstrap off. I got the backstraps and the belly loins and even the neck loins off of the, are they neck loins? Some people don't even take them off the deer.
Right.
Those are the belly loins, but then up in the neck, cavity, way up front, there's some smaller ones too, right?
Yeah. If we're talking about the same one, it's the continuation of the backstrap as it works, as it finally tunes down into the neck.
Yeah.
They take them on lamb a lot. I've taken them off my deer now. I call them neck fillets. That's what neck I refer fillets, to okay. them as. But, a neck loin, you're talking about, it's just a tender piece of meat that works its way up through the neck, being able to pull that out. So you got those out of there. Good. Very nice.
Yep. So we used almost all the, we got everything off of that deer, right? We were Indians. We used everything, right? And it was just piles of bones when we were done with it. And so that was pretty cool. And so I kept the back straps. I didn't take any of that to get processed. I did so what I do is I'll rinse them off and make sure they're clean and then pat them down. And then I'll put the back straps right in the freezer. And so then when I thaw them out before, I don't clean them up first. I clean them up before I eat them.
Gotcha.
So I'll just let the backstrap dethaw, and then I'll start cutting silver skin off and fat and all that other, all the waste, I guess, off of that. And that's how I do it. I don't do it beforehand.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I love where you've come in. Like, a basic cut is something you've traditionally gone with. You're like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Give me my roast, give me my steaks, and give me my ground. And that's yep. pretty, you know, the basic cut. And to then get that, you know, that wild hair and be like, I really want some of those hot sticks. I really want some of those.
Oh yeah.
And you went in and just got 10 pounds of this, 10 pounds of that, 10 pounds of this.
Yeah.
I've got friends who really enjoy that, the meat treat side of it, where it's, they do get a good portion of their deer cut up into summer sausage, or they get it into sticks because they do like to take those for lunches. They do like to share those. My one's a salesman. So shoot, he's got a cooler in his truck, and every client he talks to, I mean, he's pulling out hot sticks all the time, trying to sweeten the deal on that.
Yeah.
Are meat treats a big deal in your house, where you're going to take a little time to get some of those done? Like you said, it's been a while. Is this kind of like a really big treat now where you're really excited about the summer sausage coming?
Yeah. So the first things first, my kids absolutely love ground deer meat now. Mm-hmm. And my wife has now started to accept it. So for me, it's kind of motivating to me to want to go shoot another deer or even an extra deer and just maybe throw it all into grind, because we use it in replace of beef quite a bit in our household. Like last night we had mule deer spaghetti. Right. And so we did it right. And that's, we do the replacement. And then we also, like for me the other day, I finally pulled my heart out and I had heart fajitas. Right. And then I also had, then I cooked up, some of those mule deer fillets that I got, like the back straps that were cut up into steaks, and they were butterflied up and they were absolutely delicious. Just eat them with some rice at lunch. Pretty, you know, real healthy meal. And so, excuse me, it's the basics that get like, that I enjoy the most, because dude, let's not kid ourselves. You cook a back strap the right way, I don't care what kind of salami or sticks you got. You're not going to beat the perfect seasoned, perfectly cooked, medium backstrap, dude. Maybe you did it on a grill. Maybe you did it the way I like to do it. And you use that rosemary and you use that melted butter. And then you get that meat thermometer in there to check it. And then you're basting that with that garlic rosemary butter over top of it. And when you do that right, holy shit, dude, that makes me smile. I'll tell you what that does. That makes me want to go down after this podcast and go start thawing out my backstrap for tomorrow's
absolutely.
Lunch.
Absolutely. I know this lunch because, so we get, you know, we're trying to meal plan. We're trying to think ahead. We were like, hey, January, you know, family resolutions, New Year's resolutions. We're going to have lunches already pre-packed. We're going to have those ready to go. Like leftovers go right into, we got the little glass. We're upgraded to glass Tupperware now, so we can take those for lunches. So whatever we have for dinner gets packed up and yes. And well, anyway, we made a chicken. Roasted the whole chicken. We had that for dinner. We had leftovers, so we made two batches. We had a dark meat lunch, and we had a breast in for one of the lunches. However, when my wife left before I did, she took the dark meat one, and that was really the one that I wanted. I wanted the thigh. I wanted the drumstick, and I was left with the breast. And I was going to eat every bit of it because I was starving. I mean, I had broccoli and I had carrots in there with it, but it was just white chicken breast. And, you know, I sit down at my lunch and I warm it up and I happen to flip up to the Nine Finger Chronicles. He's got a story on Instagram, and I watch that and I'm watching mule deer fillets get filleted up. And what I was chewing on was not a mule deer fillet.
It did not compare.
No,
you got a little food jealousy.
That's what I was just going to say. My lunch was seasoned with backstabbing, with jealousy, and I wanted that so bad, and the salt and pepper on that breast was not cutting it.
Right.
But one heck of a lunch. I guess that's the perk of not having to be in an office, is that you have full access to your kitchen and to your wild game. It's only a door away and a few hours on the counter.
Well, and the thing about it is depending, like, the best cuts right now, another thing I really like to do is smoke my backstraps or any type of meat on the grill or on my smoker, right? Mm-hmm. That takes a long time, but just like a crock pot, you can walk away from it for a while. You can get some stuff done. But if you want to cook a good backstrap on a skillet, dude, it doesn't take too terribly long to do that. You have your heat right? It doesn't take, like, I can cook a really good wild game lunch, whether those, I have those fillets and it's a smaller cut, you know, those are smaller cuts. They're butterflied. So it doesn't take so long to cook to medium, right? A minute, you're done. Now a bigger backstrap piece might take a little longer, but I mean, still you can make a backstrap taste really good on a skillet within, you know, 10 minutes of cooking it, and pair it with, like, for me, I'm trying to eat as healthy as possible. So pretty much it's meat and rice. Maybe the Instagram story that you saw, we had a leftover onion and a leftover bell pepper from the week before. And so I was like, hey, I'm going to use this. And it just, you know, it adds to that flavor. And it took me a total of maybe 10 minutes to whip that meal up, another 20 minutes to eat it. And now it's cleanup time. So, I mean, you can do all of that in like a 30 minute period. It's a no brainer, man. And plus, it's just so good.
It is so good off of one pot too, or off one pan. Yeah. You did all that in one pan. The rice, I think, was like the minute rice you threw in the microwave.
Yeah,
so
throw in the microwave. Yep.
One pan dishes are quintessential when it comes to being a family man, being a family. Like, anything you can do in one pan or one pot, that's what's going to, you know, make life manageable.
Do you remember that hot blonde from the Food Network? Her name was Sandra Lee. Do you remember her at all?
I do remember Sandra Lee.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. So she's, just listen. The reason you stop flipping through the channels is because she's gorgeous. Okay. That's true. The reason that I stopped and started listening to her was because her meals, what she called semi-homemade. Okay. Meaning you add in the rice that's out of a container. That you can use a microwave shortcut for, right? It doesn't have, like, cooking doesn't always have to be a gigantic production. You can get really good flavor out of your wild game with very simple recipes too. And so what I'm getting at is I take those shortcuts to make the meal prep more efficient for me and the family with our busy schedule. And so, like, the other day, right, I fried up 2 pounds of ground and it sat in the refrigerator until it was time to use it. Right. Mm-hmm. Very simple. Right. We're having spaghetti. Boom. Oh, I used the other half for a burger, rice. What's that called? A sweet chili sauce lunch, by the way, delicious and simple, right? Very simple. So I really enjoy those types of meals where you want something, you want to eat it, but you don't have the time to cook it. There's a lot of options out there for this semi-homemade type meals as well. And those are the ones that I cook the most often.
Good. Not as attractive as Sandra
Lee.
Not
as attractive. Absolutely not as attractive.
David Chang. Me, us either. But David Chang, he's a big restaurateur. His favorite appliance happens to be the microwave. And it's because of what you just said. I think, they're on the same wavelength, but I think I would listen to Sandra before I would listen to David.
you're not listening, bud. You're looking.
So you were saying too, like, with those one pot meals and trying to get things all together, has your family graduated to the now 2 pound ground scenario where if it's taco night, you need two packages, or if it's spaghetti night and you're making the meat sauce, have you gone to the two packages for making that?
Yeah, dude. I mean, we get to the point where like spaghetti is no longer one pack of spaghetti, one package of ground, and one can of sauce or one jar of sauce. It is two of all those things.
Yes.
And then, but again, whatever we don't eat, we put into the refrigerator and we just eat it the next day or the day after, whatever the case is. And so like last night, my son ate a bowl of spaghetti, clean it up, put it away, comes home from wrestling. Dad, I'm starving. I need a feast. He said these are his exact words were, I need a feast. I don't need a snack. I need a feast. And I said, well, we got extra spaghetti. You want some spaghetti? He's like, yeah. He's like, Dad, I might even need more. And I said, okay, well, you eat this spaghetti first and then we'll see where you're at. And so at 8 o'clock at night after wrestling, he ate another entire bowl of spaghetti. And so, you know, I don't know. Like, it's crazy. He's so skinny. Like, I was never that skinny. He's so skinny, and the amount that he eats is ridiculous. Like, his body just must be vibrating all day long to burn all that off. So, but yes, we are a family that consumes. But here's the thing, like, we really do watch what our family eats. Like, I do not allow like just straight trash every morning. Now, this isn't necessarily wild game related. It will be when I get all my breakfast sausages back from the processor.
Yes. The gold packages.
Exactly. But sausage, eggs, maybe some oatmeal, maybe some toast, right? We don't do cereal. We don't do Pop-Tarts. We don't do heavy sugar breakfasts, right? And I think that's something that we try hard to do. Now, don't get us wrong. Maybe once a month we'll have a donut breakfast where, you know, we stop and get some donut holes or we'll get some of that stuff. And then like one thing that I'm trying to do as a 44, you know, how old am I? I'm 44 and I'm trying to eat as much protein as possible these days. And I'm trying not to eat so much sugar. I try not to drink as much and all that stuff. So to me, it's protein. And that's what I'm trying to accomplish, is to try to eat as much protein as possible. And I'm just so happy that I got some in my freezer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a chapter too that, you know, I mean, it's been hitting me square in the face and I need to address it as well. But like you said, like the amount of protein that I need is going to be way better than the amount of carbohydrates or the amount of fats that I want to put in, because I mean, I can put the carbohydrates, I can put the fat away easy. And I probably should be lowering myself on those. I'm not 44, but I am approaching that big 40 mark, come here in May. So things, you know, I can still take a hit. It's the getting back up that, it's the problem. It takes me a little bit longer to get back up. And if I wait a little less, that might also help it. So anyway, that's hitting us in the face too. With lean meat that we acquire ourselves, I can't think of anything better than be it a backstrap, be it something you put in the slow cooker from the shoulder or from the hind leg. I think we're blessed with the lifestyle that we're trying to leave lead. Can you agree with that?
Absolutely, Ken. Absolutely. I mean, there's no better feeling to me, whenever I sit down, whether it's a semi homemade meal or it's a backstrap or it's a production for wild game, whenever I cook it, I feel good knowing that the only person who touched this meat, some of it anyway, was me or maybe another person helping me process it. Really? I mean, how many hands go through a pack of ground beef at the store, or a chicken breast? Like, how many people do you think touch that, or surfaces that touch that? I used to work for a company that we were a sanitation contractor, right? And Do you want to hear? You want to hear a crazy story?
As a guy who grew up on a poultry farm, I'm very interested.
Okay. I hope this doesn't like gross people out from the standpoint of the food industry. Okay. So for a while, I worked in a factory that processed turkeys, the white turkeys that live in barns their whole life. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so here is, I'm sitting in this factory and I'm watching how a turkey, they pull them out of the semi. There's these calipers. They throw their feet into the caliper. And then it's like a conveyor belt, right? It's all on a conveyor belt. And then they run them through what was called the blood room. Okay. The blood room is a small room where there's a pitching wheel. It almost looks like a pitching machine, but one end has a razor blade on it. Okay. So, and this little device where it'll catch their head and then it's angled down, so then it stretches their neck out. It runs their head and neck through this pitching wheel with the razor blade on it. And what it's meant to do is cut all of their junk off, like cut their throat. And then the birds go crazy and they're flapping like this, and blood is just misting and spraying all over the place. Okay. Not something you can just sit and watch for a while. It's pretty gruesome. Okay. Then the next room they go into is a scalding hot bath of water. It's boiling water. And then that conveyor belt drops down and it submerges them in boiling water for a couple minutes. Like it's like a long, narrow bath. And then it comes up. And what now we're starting the process of getting all the feathers off the birds. Okay. The next machine that they run these birds through is, it looks like two basketballs. Okay. And on these basketballs, it looks like big rubber dildos. Okay.
Yep.
They're just flopping there. But when they turn this machine on, it runs them through this machine, and those dildo looking rubber things basically beat the feathers off of them. Okay. Just beats the feathers off of them. With all that said, sometimes the turkey is still alive after going through that entire process.
Oh right my there. Goodness.
It's nuts. It's nuts. Yeah. Okay. So the next thing, they go into another room and it's a vacuum. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They take that vacuum and they stuff it right up their butt and it sucks all the guts out. It just sucks all the stuff out. And then they go in there and they collect the heart. They collect the gizzard. They collect the lungs and some of the other entrails that you'll see in like a Thanksgiving turkey. Right, like that. Mm-hmm. And so then they'll cut the neck and then they'll package that and they'll stuff it in. And then it goes into a chilling pool where it will cool down the meat. It'll come back out and then it goes into a packaging and then it goes into freezing. And so after watching that, because my job was to clean, like I ran a crew that cleaned those types of facilities. Okay. USDA says you gotta clean it. But right there alone, you're looking at through that entire process, there's four or five people that touch, maybe six even, that touch that bird before it's even packaged, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe even more. And so you look at that and then you look at the meat that you harvested. And yeah, it was out in the woods and you had to cut it up and maybe there's some grass on it, or maybe, maybe you didn't do the best job, removing the anus out of the buck or whatever the case is, and maybe a little turd falls on it, or you know what I mean? So, like that kind
I'll
of stuff.
I'll take the pellet over all those hands touching.
Exactly. Wipe it off. You just wipe it off. Maybe you rinse it off. Maybe you don't. Pat it dry, freeze it. And now you know that you are the only person who touched that meat. And that's pretty rewarding, dude. I think that's pretty cool.
Yes. What a very descriptive way to go ahead and just say everybody that is listening, they're like, you know what? We're going to get another deer this year. We are not going to the store.
Exactly. If you want a turkey for Thanksgiving, dude, just go shoot one.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Dan, this has been a great hour. I've been fun to just connect with you, both talking about how the end of your season was, the celebrations that you had, the looking forward into the next year, our chat about our kids. I mean, as much as we love hunting and we love being in the outdoors, I would say that my heart is even getting even bigger for just being with my kids and being able to share the outdoors with them, because they're going to go on adventures that I only wish that I could go on. I think there's going to be some great plans for your kids here in the future.
Yep.
As my listeners are, tuning in and they're wanting to check more out from you, I'm sure they probably know who you are, but where can we find you on the interwebs? Where can they connect more with you?
Hey, one second, Nick. We gotta talk about something real quick.
I fast forwarded. My bad.
Give me a minute here. All right. The taste between mule deer and whitetail. Okay.
Oh, this is an exclusive here. We got to know the difference between mule deer and whitetail.
Here's what I'm saying. Mule deer, man, it's so good. I like mule deer. The mule deer that I have is it's like a sweeter meat. It's a little sweeter. And it is so damn good. Like, I like it better than whitetail. It's so good. I'm not sure why. I'm guessing it's the grasses that they eat and less corn and mast that, you know, like your whitetail might eat. But I believe I read somewhere where a mule deer can consume 480 different varieties of vegetation, and a whitetail can only consume like 250 or something like that. Right. So the amount of food options that a mule deer can eat are more than what a whitetail can. So I don't know this was a South Dakota plains, rolling hills, grassland type of buck. And so I'm guessing it was just a lot of grasses, but it was sweet. It's a little sweeter, and it actually doesn't have what some people might consider, you know, like the uninitiated may call something gamey, right? The flavor that me and you probably really like.
Oh yeah.
Right. Some people would call that gamey. That I don't get the feeling of that from this mule deer. I get a sweeter taste. And I mean, you pair that with like a red wine, dude, you're in business, man. It's so good. It's so good.
I'm going to go on this as well. It's also in the eye of the beholder.
Yes, it is.
That mule deer. You know why it tastes so sweet? Part of what you are saying as well. When you age an animal, you intensify the flavor. You're allowing water to evaporate from the muscle tissue. It wasn't the muscle tissue that we're talking about. The aging here was in you pursuing that animal. It's been aging for 6 years in your head. This has been a backstrap that has been an idea in your head, and it is now in front of you. No. If I taste it, there will be probably points that I can say, yes, it is sweeter. I get notes of more sage. I get notes of this and that. But for you as a goal-driven individual, as a hunter who has proclaimed himself as, I am going to go after specific animals, I think it's 10 times as sweet to you because the blood, the sweat, the tears, the drive homes with empty coolers, that I think is what made it sweet. I think it's there 6 years of age on that.
There you go.
On that deer.
Well, that could be, man. That could be. It's all like in my head. Like I could be eating just raw shit And I'm like, at least I worked for it. You know?
So as much as, yes, you do have very good points. And I one day I would definitely love to put the side by side on a mule and a whitetail. But I'm also like, I know how hard you've been working for that buck.
Yeah.
And to get it and to then be able to come home with that backstrap. I think right now you relive that hunt with every bite that you took of it. You're reliving it all. So, enjoy that. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think we had this discussion too. I'm a Pinot Noir when it comes to wine and venison. I think, are you still a Cab Sauv guy? You like to go the driest and the heaviest?
I like a good cab, right? Don't get me wrong. But it's not my favorite red.
Okay.
My favorite red is a holy cow. I'm having the biggest brain fart right now, and I cannot believe
it. It was a hard switch. That is my bad. That is my bad.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is embarrassing because I just picked up a bottle of it. It's not a Pinot Noir. It's its own grape variety. It's a standalone grape. It's a red wine. It is, it's not as popular as a Pinot Noir or as a Cabernet Sauvignon. It's,
is it Blanc? Shit. Is it one of those?
No, it's not a Blanc. It's not a blend. My God, I have to find it. I have to do it. Hang on 1 second. We're doing this right now. Please be patient with me.
Absolutely. Okay. Folks on the hunt for, so sorry that we have to look up the style and grape variety of our wines that we pair with our wild red, game. But I feel it's
red important. Wine variety chart right here.
Here we go. He's got it. Leaning dry.
I do like a Malbec. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a petite something. Not a petite Syrah. It's a petite. My God, this is stupid. it's a petite something. It's a petite petite. It's not a petite Syrah. It's a
Noir?
Petite. No, it's not a petite Noir. One second. Hey, I got it. It's a petite Verdot.
Ah, there you go,
dude. My favorite wine with wild game is a petite Verdot. There it is.
There it is.
We got it. Sorry to the listeners who are like, Jesus, let's end this. This is ridiculous. But you got to fact check it. I had to say it.
Yep.
Petite Verdot is my favorite red wine.
Perfect. And that goes with mule. And I would assume it would also go with the less sweet whitetail.
Yep.
Perfect.
Don't get me wrong. I like a cab with all that stuff because they're easier to get.
Yep. You can get off on any shelf that you need to. So,
absolutely.
Dan, where can we find you?
Dude, I don't even want to talk about me. All I want to do is say, dude, Nick, what you're doing here, I wish more people understood, to be honest with you. Like, I think you're doing an amazing job with Huntivore, dude. Like, straight up. This podcast is literally one of my favorites, and you've been on the network now for how many years because we had a talk a while. How many years have you been on? Have you had this?
I think we're five on the network. Cause I am
six.
I started in 2018 and I think it was 2019. Which is one of my favorite moments. You got a hold of me and you said, you don't sound like dog shit. I have worn that badge of honor. That is a direct quote that you gave me. And I was like, I took it and ran. I'm like, Dan Johnson said, I don't sound like dog shit. So that's been my badge of honor. And that was 5 years ago.
So you've been doing it for a while. And man, I tell you what, this culinary side to the hunt is a very important side of the hunt. Because the goal isn't just bone on the wall. It's to use every part of the animal that we possibly can and to turn it into something. Like, I like the fact that you have this heavy focus on this portion of it. It's obviously a niche, and there's a lot more people out there that are concerned about how to get the deer and not as much concerned of what to do with the deer when you've gotten it. And I think, dude, this balances out the chaos of the other side.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It.
So thank you is what I'm getting at.
Yes. And I'm so honored to be able to have this platform to be able to do this, because there's a day where me, myself, have to own up to the activities that I do. I just had this conversation with another person, and it just keeps hitting me as I'm interacting more people who are giving me hard questions about being a meat eater. And they're like, you literally eat the flesh of other creatures. And to answer them straight blankly, be like, yes, unapologetically, I do. But look at the effort that I go into doing that. Look at the impact that I have by making my own choices, by pursuing the animals that I then eat. I eat them in their entirety. I'm not just taking the backstrap. I'm not just ordering steaks and then not worrying about the rest of the animal. You know, there's only so many ribeyes on a beef. Mm-hmm. Do I love a ribeye? Absolutely. But at the same time, that whole steer needs to be used and needs to be consumed. So that's where we get our ground. That's where you get your sausage. That's where you get all these different other elements. And to basically own that up and show, like, this process isn't a bloodthirsty endeavor. Mm-hmm. While, you know, the level of people who are going to need to be fed, going to need to be going to eat meat, we're going to have meat plants that are like one that you thoroughly described. Yep. We're going to have that to feed how many people are here. But if we as hunters can take one extra step and be like, hey, I'm not going to have a meal from that particular factory, I'm going to go and get my own, that gives us a little bit of reprieve. That's one less bird that may have to go through that factory. And that's one more deer that may get to be on the hoof for a year until we take it again next year. So in a nutshell, that's where it's at.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hey, I'm going to let my listeners on out, Dan, so hold on for just a second. Folks, I hope you have a great time on this conversation. We have been on all edges of the world on this hunt. We talked about mule deer. We talked about how are we getting those critters back on such long adventures. We're saying that a basic pack and grind and getting some of those just unalterated pieces of meat can still flourish and be amazing in a pan. They can sit right alongside with some of that summer sausage and some of those sticks. We even started talking about our kids, and we've talked about wine on this podcast. So if you were looking for variety, you got it today. So folks, as you take off and go through the rest of your week, if you're taking apart an animal yourself that you acquired, or whether it's just making a meal that you're also using that microwave to throw the rice in, make sure the knife that you are using is very sharp.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.